Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. On this Wednesday, February 17th, on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center meteorologist, Adam Carroll. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, and what a morning it has been here, especially on the Salt Lake City side of things. But Harley has had another difficult day for driving to and from Park City, and they continue to have the difficulties of about a 60-minute drive time from Salt Lake to Park City, about 45 minutes from Park City to Salt Lake here this morning. As snow is winding down across the Wasatch Back, it will likely just turn more snow showery here for the remainder of the morning before just kind of coming to an end altogether. As snow will eventually start coming to an end too on the Wasatch Front side of things, but very, very heavy snow has occurred on the Wasatch Front side. We're talking 6 to 12 inches in locally higher amounts on this side, but you know, we're going to, once things wind down for the remainder of the day, and we'll get to a high temperature of about 24 in Salt Lake, in Park City, we'll actually end up having a cold night tonight. Skies will clear across the Wasatch Back, leading to just a 5-degree overnight low, and we'll maintain the mid-20s tomorrow, but it will be a much quieter, a bit of sunshine will break out as well, so a partly cloudy day. And then we get ready and get another storm in there. And this one will be another snow event for Park City. This will be Friday into Saturday. And so we'll see several more inches of snow here for Park City proper and another 5 to 10 inches for our peaks in and around Park City. And that will be the end of our storm cycle for a little while here. As temperatures rise into the mid-30s for that Friday time frame and then back down into the 20s here heading into the weekend. But the good news is that we've seen so much snow in the last week that it has really done a nice job putting a dent in our snowpack and also into our drought. So we've seen 10 to 15% increases in our snowpack over the last week, which is huge as we're continuing with this storm cycle. But as we head into the latter half of the weekend, as that next storm clears out, and that will likely lead to some more travel impacts for sure through Saturday, we're actually going to start warming up quickly. We're going to be into the 40s for daytime highs by the time we get to next week with plenty of sunshine as we just get into a drier, quieter, and milder pattern here until we await our next storm system. But what a week it has been here for northern Utah.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Adam.
You bet.
With a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us, Trent from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center. Good morning, Trent.
Hey, good morning. Lots and lots of snow. it feels great, though. I think I live down here in Mill Creek, and I'm staring at about 20 inches on top of my garage, and it's a great sight to see all the snow. But with all this snow, comes definitely an increase in the avalanche danger, and I'll get to that in just a second. But upper Little Cottonwood Canyon over the past few days is now sitting at 50 to 80 inches of new snow. In upper Big Cottonwood Canyon, we have 25 to 40 inches. Park City Ridgeline, 15 to 30 inches, all within the past couple of days. And just the snow is just heavy. You know, it weighs a lot, with some places getting 4, 5, and 6 inches of water weight with this snow. And basically what that means is our avalanche danger today is extreme on all aspects and elevations. So avoid being under or near any steep slope. And this applies to anyone going into the mountains today or by the mountains. This includes skiing, snowboarding, snowshoeing, running, sledding, dog walking, what have you. If you have a steep slope, we just need to not be anywhere around those steep areas. Even on the, you know, foothills and in the benches, it's just kind of the day to stay away from the mountains. And, you know, extreme avalanche danger, what it means is it's the highest level of avalanche danger. It means that avalanches are certain to occur. Avalanches may run historic distances and create new avalanche paths. Avalanches will be fast-moving, far-running, and very destructive, and avalanches may reach or occur in places that are not normally affected by avalanches. So I guess the bottom line is it's pretty dangerous out there, and we just need to, if you are going to head out into the backcountry, you need to be well away from anything steep.
Yeah, and I thought I saw it first yesterday when I saw a lot of black on the diagram that you guys use to report avalanche danger. Today it is all black. No red at all.
Correct.
Yeah.
No red. All black.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, we're getting reports out of Little Cottonwood Canyon right now that avalanches are running, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 vertical feet down. And, you know, the canyon there is still closed. You know, there's just a lot of a lot of these natural avalanches are coming down and crossing like popular hiking trails that are, you know, that people snowshoe on, or, you know, they're running and covering like the summer roads. And it's just, yeah, you just got to avoid that stuff for today. It's pretty nasty out there.
Yeah, we use the skull and crossbones on our weather sheet here when reporting the avalanche forecast. So, yeah, that's very appropriate today. Okay.
Perfect. And actually, moving into tomorrow, too, let's not forget tomorrow. You know, we still have an avalanche warning for all the mountains of northern Utah. Pretty much everywhere is high in extreme danger. And tomorrow, unfortunately, it's going to be a beautiful sunny day. People are going to want to be out in those mountains. Just remember that it's going to also be very dangerous tomorrow. Even though we won't be under an avalanche warning, it doesn't mean that our snowpack has just healed up overnight and now we can go out and hit steep slopes. It's still going to be very dangerous moving into the next couple of days.
Okay, Trent, thanks so much. Be careful.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with longtime Wasatch Race Series race director Dave Hanscom, telling us about his retirement. We'll also be taking a look back at how Nordic skiing has changed over the last 5 decades or so. University of Utah Director of Skiing Frederick Landstedt will be on the phone. He's got details about the upcoming Collegiate Ski Regional Championships taking place at Park City Mountain Resort and Soldier Hollow. And finally, Park City Historic Alliance Executive Director Allison Kulo with an update from yesterday's board meeting, as well as departure from the organization. Stay tuned. Well, this Saturday's Wasatch Citizens Race 20-kilometer ski race at White Pine Farm will be the final race for Park City local Dave Hanscom as the race director. After 30 years, he's retiring. Dave Hanscom joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So why is this the one to retire from? Why now?
Well, as I said in an article to Tuna News early in the year, I'm going to be 80 years old in April, and I've been doing this for 30 years. You add that together, you get 110, and that's plenty. Too much.
Okay. So is this the final race of the series this year, or is it just your final race?
Yeah, this is the last race of the year, and I told the Tuna board that I would hang in there for this year, and they'd have to find somebody to do it from now on. So we'll see what happens.
Big shoes to fill, or big ski boots, I guess, to fill there. So,
thanks.
Are you still competing in the races?
I do some of the time. I don't always go out and race, but, you know, it depends kind of what's going on with the races, and things look like they're under control, and I jump in at the end of the group and ski around the course.
Okay, and I guess still winning. Do you even have anybody in your age group anymore?
It's not hard to win my age group at this point. There's just one other guy, and he kind of struggles. So, but yeah, winning isn't the issue as we get older. It's just getting out there and enjoying one another's company and getting the exercise.
Yeah, and this series has been wildly successful. Of course, we kind of had to stop things last year, but I mean, they've been they were organized 30 years ago, or was it even before that?
No, it was before that. Yeah, the series started in, I think it was 78. And I got involved as skiing in the series in the early 80s, but I didn't start helping out with the organization until 1991 or 92, I guess it was, because this is the 30th year.
Yeah, so you've got actually some race history in your history. I mean, you skied, you're a collegiate Nordic ski racer?
Yeah, I was a Nordic skier, which at the time meant cross country and jumping. because Nordic Combined actually counted as an event. So, yeah, I skied at Middlebury, graduated in 63, and those were good times.
I bet. And then just have kept it up. I mean, something that you've just loved doing.
Yeah, I've kept up the cross-country part, not the jumping part, obviously. There really wasn't much opportunity for jumping, but cross-country is continue to grow and a great community of folks. So I jumped in and started, joining the group around here back in the early 80s.
Yeah, and I don't know when you moved to Park City, but I know you moved to Salt Lake, I think, in the 70s, and did what so many people did in those days, strapped on your leather boots and your skinny skis with three-pin bindings and skins, and did a lot of that backcountry skiing that we do today on entirely different equipment. Can you talk a little bit about some of those early days?
Yeah. We moved to Salt Lake in 1970, and I joined up with the Wasatch Mountain Club, not knowing anything about backcountry skiing or powder or anything like that, being an Eastern guy. No skins. I just skied on my old racing skis and soon bought a pair of wooden Bona 1800s. And backcountry skied on those. I put wax on the bottom and hiked up the mountains skied down, learned how to ski the powder on really narrow skis. I tease my friends these days on their big fat skis and their AT bindings. Hey, you guys, you need to learn how to ski. Come on, get those skinny ones out there.
Right. I mean, it's a whole different sport for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot easier on the new skis, and that's probably part of why there are so many people out there. You know, back in the day, there weren't very many of us, and, you know, we would go out and, well, for example, I can remember skiing Wilson Fork. There were three of us, and we were looking around at new terrain to put into the book that I was writing at the time, Wasatch Tours, and, you know, we never saw a soul out there.
Yeah. And in fact, that's something you have done. I think written not one, but two of those Wasatch Tour books, or is it just an updated one of the first one?
Well, the first edition was a one-volume book that we wrote. It actually was published in 1975, I think it was. And then in the early 90s, we updated it to a three-volume set. So the new edition has three volumes, and we expanded it from just the Tri-Canyon area. Actually, it was a little bigger than the Tri-Canyon area, but Central Wasatch. We expanded it all the way north to Ben Lomond and the peaks at the north and Mount Nebo to the south.
Yeah. And again, that was sort of the backcountry side of things. But I think maybe you could also tell us a little bit about kind of the early days of just of Nordic skiing here in the Park City area. I certainly remember the days of Steve Erickson and Jim Miller there at White Pine Touring at the Municipal Golf Course.
Yeah. Some of the first races, Steve and Jim, you know, they were just grooming with a snowmobile and a little track setter. And in fact, in order to smooth things out a little bit, they would go around. They had an old bed spring that they dragged behind their snowmobile with a little weight on it, and then a track setter after that, because everything was classic skiing back then. And they had a few little races, way back in the early to mid 70s. So yeah, that's where it all started in Park City.
Yeah, so maybe talk just a little bit about some of the changes that you have seen over the last 40, 50 years.
Yeah, well, certainly equipment is a big one. You know, I mentioned that I was out there on my skinny skis in the backcountry and certainly just leather boots. That I had an old pair of jumping boots that I adapted to fit into the three-pin bindings so that I'd have a little more support when I was coming down the hill. But the track skiing was just classic skiing. early 80s, we started doing a little skating on our classic skis, just, you know, the marathon skate where you keep one ski in the track and you push off with the other ski. But then skating really took over, and they started grooming things wider and wider, and equipment became very specialized, you know, fancy skating skis that were fairly flat all the way from tip to tail with no camber in them, with sticky wax under the foot. And now even sticky wax is starting to go with the waxless skis that have little pieces of mohair or some other material under the foot. So, yeah, and skating boots come way up over the ankle. They look, they're sturdier than some of the old boots I used to backcountry ski in.
Right.
So, yeah, things have changed.
They sure have, yeah. Interesting, though, that, an entirely different sport. And waxing was so important back in the day that, it could really make or break a ski race, and I guess we still see that. I think the people in the classic races of the Citizen Series still—they spend some time waxing their skis.
Oh, sure, and skating too. You know, waxing is really important. The speed that you get on your skating skis, or your classic skis too, is really highly dependent upon the wax that you use. Some of the modern waxes, with all of the fluoride in them, are so much faster than the paraffin waxes that we used to use. But speaking of that, the fluoride waxes are on the way out for various reasons. That partly because of when you iron it in, the fumes are really not good for your body, and partly because they leave residue in the snow, and it's not a great environmental situation. So, yeah, there's a big revolution going on right now in waxing, bead waxing, as well as kick waxing.
I just also wanted to note, and rightfully so, that you were inducted into the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame back in 2015. So congratulations on that. Certainly well deserved.
Thank you.
Again, this weekend, your final as the race director for the Wasatch Citizen Series race, a very popular race. Tell us how people can participate if they're ready to go ski 20Ks.
Yeah, we have a 6.7 kilometer loop around the golf or around the farm, so it's three laps around. We also have a novice division or a recreation division if people just want to ski around it once. But they need to go to the UtahNordic.org website and sign up, and you have to do that by the end of the day, Thursday, in order to get into the race. We've changed things a lot for this year because of COVID. All registration is online, and it's not quite as social an event as it has been in past years. We've eliminated the lunches and award ceremonies and prize drawings and all of that, so people can just come ski and leave, and it's still fun to get together and see folks, but it's not quite the way it has been in the past, and hopefully will be again next year.
Okay, so is there parking there at St. Mary's Church Center as opposed to having to ski?
Yeah,
over from
that's me? Correct. And we'll be outdoors. We won't be using their big hall for our registration and party and everything. Everything will, check in before the races. We'll be in the parking lot, and yes, hopefully we'll have plenty of parking for everybody. And we open up the fence there. I'll open that up tomorrow, and people can access the farm course from that end for just this weekend.
Okay. Well, so what are you going to do with your Saturday mornings then, winter mornings after this?
Well, Saturday morning is a very small part of what I do.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So Saturday mornings on race days, I'll hopefully still be out there. But yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of organization that goes on in between, and it's really a 12-month a year task trying to line up sponsors and getting schedules set up and all of that. So it's I don't know. I do a lot of bird watching these days, as well as hiking and running and biking and, you know, being in the mountains. So maybe I'll do more of all of that.
Okay. Well, again, on behalf of all of those who have participated in the Citizen Series race, thanks for your hard work over the last 30 years. That's pretty impressive. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I just want to thank all the folks that have come out and supported the series, and especially the race crew. I mean, we've got an amazing group of people. Many of them have been with us for 20 years or more. And they're the ones that really make it happen on race day. They know exactly what to do, and they just go ahead and get it done. And things have worked out well. And also want to thank the Ski Touring Center folks, White Pine, Soldier Hollow, and, of course, the Tuna folks down at Mountain Dell for being accommodating. We've had to move a couple of races this year, and the Touring Centers have been great about helping us out and making things happen.
Okay. Again, thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot, Leslie, and always good to chat.
Again, that's longtime Wasatch Race Series race director and longtime Park City local Dave Hanscom. Again, after 30 years, stepping back from that race series directorship. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:28.
Hi, this is Ann McCoyd. On behalf of Chin McCoyd Fleming Harris at Berkshire Hathaway, I'm delighted to continue our tradition of support for KPCW. KPCW has been a pillar of our Park City community for over 40 years, and we love and cherish this award-winning NPR station. We can be found at DeerValleyRealEstate.com.
Andy here, manager at Jan's Rentstall, tuning up KPCW. Rentstall offers tuning services from recreational to race tunes, from winter stagger tuning machines to detailed hand tuning. Jan's will keep you sliding through the season. Located at Deer Valley Snow Park Lodge, but available at all Jan's locations, 649-4949 or jans.com.
It's 8:29 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. We're going to stick with this ski theme. Didn't realize it when I was putting the show together, but there are a lot of fast skiers in Park City this week with the RMISA Championships taking place at Park City Mountain Resort as well as at Soldier Hollow. On the phone with details, I have the Director of Skiing for the University of Utah, Frederick Landstedt. Good morning, Frederick.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. This is your third season at the University of Utah?
That's correct. Yeah, I came here from University of New Mexico, where I coached the ski program for 20 years down there, and we won one NCAA championship, and I was coaching there. And I also coached before that at University of Colorado at CU for 3 years. So I've been around the college circus for a very long time, and I took the chance to get the job in Utah when it came up, and I love it here and getting some great snow.
Yeah, where do you originally come from?
Originally from Sweden. So I came over back in the days. I was recruited actually for the University of New Mexico ski team. So I ended up skiing in college myself, and then stuck around, met my wife down in New Mexico, and loved it in the U.S. and been around skiing ever since.
Yeah. So what was the draw to Utah?
Oh, it's an incredible place. I mean, I knew it. It's always had a great team up here. Lots of snow and close to the mountains. Very good skiing everywhere. I mean, lots of world-class alpine areas, and we have plenty of places to ski Nordic. So that's the draw of the university and the area here in Utah. I mean, I also knew that the team up here is very well funded by the university and well respected. So it's a great place to work and live.
Yeah, and I think you then have been then with the three Western ski powerhouses of university skiing, New Mexico, CU, and the Utes.
That's right. And I've been, for in the college circuit for a long time. And I, when I was at CU, I was unfortunately won the one NCAA team championship there, and then. Mm. Was in New Mexico. We won the first ever NCAA title in any sport when I was coaching ski team down there. And of course, in my first year here in 2019, we won the NCAA championship here. And then last year, we were a little bit unlucky. We were leading after 2 days at the championship when it was canceled due to COVID, so we didn't get to finish it. So we're looking forward to hoping that we get to have a championship this year.
Okay, so you oversee then both the Alpine and Nordic teams?
Yeah, I oversee both teams. I have a head Nordic coach, Miles Havlik, who I'm working closely with and coaching and taking care of the Nordic team. And then I have a head Alpine coach, Justin Johnson, JJ, from Park City, and Mary Joyce also lives up in Park City. So they primarily take care of the Alpine team. So they do all the planning and practices and everything for the Alpine team. I oversee it a little bit, but, you know, JJ is a great coach, and he takes care of pretty much everything when it comes to the Alpine side.
Yeah. And, of course, I don't know if people, I mean, he's got his start back here as a former Devo and Park City Ski Team alum. So, again, competing, I think, himself in college and U.S. ski team, yeah?
That's correct, yeah. He was on the World Cup tour as a downhiller and skied on the U.S. ski team for a few years. So, yes, of course, lots of contacts up there in Park City area, and everybody knows who he is and who his dad is. And he's been around ski racing for a long time.
Yeah. Also, I think you've been coaching then Sam Duprat before he got named to the U.S. ski team?
Yeah, Sam was actually done before I got here, but I got to know Sam a little bit, yes.
Okay. And, of course, he had just a horrific ski accident in December and recovering from that. You know, it has always seemed to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that many of the members of the Ute ski team are actually foreigners. I mean, how many Americans do we have on the teams? Is it more balanced than it is been in the past?
Yeah, first I want to wish, of course, Sam a great recovery. He's back now, I believe, he's with his family and up at Jeremy Ranch recovering. He got surgery on both legs, and you know, he's up moving around with a walker, and you know, anybody knows him, you know, just wish him well in his recovery. It was a bad accident. Yeah, when it comes to foreigners and Americans, I mean, obviously, as a team here, we want to have a team that can win championship every year, so we try to recruit the best possible athletes from anywhere in the world, and that's how you win in college. But we have quite a few Americans and primarily right now on the Nordic team. We have four Nordic skiers, two men and two women are on the U.S. ski team development team. And total on the Nordic right now, four out of our six women are Americans, and two out of our five men are Americans. And we also have one Canadian man. On the Alpine team right now, we have a little bit, we have fewer Americans. We have a couple of fast Alpine skiers. Keely Cashman, who was in the U.S. ski team, and this year she was primarily skiing World Cup, and she also got injured over in Europe, so she won't ski college for us this year, but hopefully, you know, in the next few years she'll be competing for us. We have also Katie Vesterstein. She's from the Midwest. She's a very good skier on our team. Madison Hoffman, she skis for Australia, but she's really been spending her time up in Park City. Her family lives in Park City. So, you know, it goes in waves a little bit. Sometimes you have years with many Americans that are of high caliber and we can pick up a few, and other years there are fewer and we have to go and find some Europeans or foreigners to have the best possible team.
Yeah. And you also have another local, I know, with your Nordic team, Sydney Palmer Ledger is how I say it. And so how's she doing?
That's correct. She's doing great. She's a freshman here and obviously came from a very strong program. She grew up skiing in Park City and then skied for the Sun Valley program under Rick Capella for many years. And she came to us last fall, and Sydney, together with our other freshman, Novi McCabe from Washington, has really been dominating the women's side of college this year. They both of them were, you know, winning races and placing top three in every college race early on. And then they both left for Europe to ski in the Junior World Championship over in Finland, and they just returned. So they'll be back now for the rest of the season for us.
Okay, so as I mentioned early on, we've got the RMISA Championships. That's the Rocky Mountain Intercollegiate Ski Association Championships. They're going to be held at Park City Mountain Resort this week. And then we also have, I think, folks at Soldier Hollow for the Nordic races next week. So tell us what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's right. We took over this year the RMISA Regional Championship. It was originally planned for Alaska, but because of COVID and travel, we decided to try to host it in Utah instead, which worked well for everyone. Less travel for most of the teams. But this is the championship for the western region of NCAA skiing. It's we have an eastern region, a central region, a western region. So the teams that are here are University of Alaska Anchorage, Alaska Fairbanks, Montana State, Denver University, University of Colorado, Montana State, Westminster College in Salt Lake, and Colorado Mountain College. And I believe for Nordic, we'll also have University of Wyoming is going to bring a team over. So it's a very good field, many top athletes from lots of different countries. It's just fortunate this year that we don't allow people out there really watching because of COVID restrictions, but the championship will be there in Park City Mountain this Thursday, Friday. So we're very busy with a giant slalom on Thursday for both men and women and slalom races on Friday for both men and women. And you can follow the results on live-timing.com or for the USSA website. So they have live timing going on, which is one way to kind of watch the results. And also afterwards, of course, if you go to the Utah Utes website, you can read all about it and see all the results.
Now, are these races going to be held on the Olympic courses or on Payday?
It'd be over on the Olympic courses, next to Peekaboo. I think they would probably use Peekaboo for the slalom and
Willie's, maybe.
The name of it just eludes me right now, but the one right next to it, the GS Hill, will be the
Willie's, I think.
The one
is,
on Thursday.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Awesome. What's your expectation here? I mean, sounds like you were have a good chance of winning these, or?
Yeah, we have a good chance for sure. I mean, our goal is always to win every meet, really, and so far this year we've been doing that, and of course we want to try to win the regional championship. It's always tough because, as everyone knows, especially in alpine skiing, you know, anything can happen. You can straddle a gate or ski out or crash, and you can lose your best skier or your top two skiers. And in collegiate skiing, the top three from each team. For men and the top three for women in each race score team points, and then you add those up. So collegiate skiing is kind of interesting because we combine men and women and alpine and cross-country skiing. So there are four different really groups within the team, and they each have two races each. So, you know, lots of things can happen, but we believe our team is so strong that even if we have some of the top skiers, something happened to them, we still have, you know, very good depth on the team, so we can still score lots of points.
Okay, and then as I mentioned, then the Nordic team, they'll be racing at Soldier Hollow Monday and Tuesday, finishing up the championships.
Yeah, actually, the Monday and Tuesday, we're putting on the makeup race for that'll be part of the Westminster Invitational, so mm-hmm. That'll be the kind of the Nordic part. So those are qualification races for the Nordic skiers towards the NCAA championship. Our regionals will actually be next Friday, Saturday, the 26th, 27th at Soldier Hollow.
Okay. All right. And then, so is it just the top team from the Western regionals here that goes on to the NCAA championship in March?
No, actually, in skiing, you qualify as an individual. So we have a certain number of individuals from our region that can qualify. So some teams will bring six men, six women, which is a full team. So that's three alpine men, three alpine women, and three Nordic men and three Nordic women. So that's all. That's the maximum you're allowed to bring to the championship. But there will be some teams that might only qualify two men and two women in an event. So these races are important for the individual qualification as well as for the team points for the meet.
Okay. All right. So, again, how do people watch since they can't be there live?
Yeah, it's tough. That's hard one this year. And, you know, it's the same for really every sport. So it's very tough to watch anything. Obviously, people can be skiing at Park City and peek mm-hmm. over and, you know, and see that the race is going on or ride the lift there and look down and maybe see part of the course. But we don't allow anybody really standing around there or within the race arena watching. You can be a little bit outside the race arena possibly and see what's going on. But otherwise, on livetiming.com, it's a way to watch it and see every athlete that as they finish. You have their time right away, you have their place right away, and you can see how they're doing.
Okay. Yeah, things have really changed during COVID. It's amazing that we're even having races, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it is. And we've been we're very fortunate. We've been having actually a pretty normal college season. We worked out in the fall lots of meetings to work out the best possible protocols to make safe competitions. You know, everyone has to be tested before they can travel to Utah. They have to be tested, you know, before the competitions. They have to fill out the forms online to certify that they're healthy and so on. And then, of course, wear masks really as long as they're not competing or moving on the skis and then social distancing. So we've been, you know, having very safe competitions considering what is going on. And, of course, best place for anyone to be right now is to be outside and to be skiing. That's probably the safest and best location. So, you know, outside sports is we're a little fortunate there that we don't have to be in a gym or a place inside where it's more crowded.
Okay. Well, best of luck to you and the University of Utah ski team. We'll be rooting for the Utes. Thanks, Frederick, for your time this morning.
Well, thanks a lot, Leslie, and thanks for having me on.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. On the phone now with a recap from yesterday's historic Park City Alliance Board meeting, I have Executive Director Allison Kulo. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first, wanted just to note, we hear you're leaving the organization. How come?
Well, my contract is up in the end of June, and I was able to come back to the HPCA in September of 2019, and while I love working with the organization, I'm ready for some new challenges.
So what's next for you?
I don't know yet.
All right. So this is a part-time job, or is it a part-time pay and a full-time job?
It's a part-time job with part-time pay, but really, yeah, I'm averaging between, you know, 20 and 25 hours. Definitely with the pandemic, those have increased during certain months, depending on what's been happening. But it's always been a part-time job, and I've had other contracts as well.
Yeah. Okay. So that's 20, 25 hours a week you're talking about.
Pardon me. Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Okay. So again, you're going to make it through then the June meeting, and in the meantime, they're looking for somebody else?
Correct. Yes. So the executive committee has put together a job description and a process, and they're starting to advertise the position this week. And we'll be going through that process until the position is filled.
Okay. Let's see. Yesterday, you heard a presentation from the Park City Chamber Bureau about the lodging numbers. And according to their data, lodging down 50% in January. I guess that's really no surprise. Is that what we were expecting with a no Sundance this year?
Right. So again, I do believe that's what we were expecting for no Sundance. It's just hard when you see that number on paper. But when you look at February and especially March, we're really starting to see those numbers come back. And fingers crossed that everyone can stay healthy and everything can stay open so we can have those visitors here.
Yeah. So any insight on how President's weekend went?
You know, it seemed very, very good. You know, we had heard that occupancy was around 80%. The businesses saw a lot of great traffic during that time from visitors. And so I feel like it was a successful President's Day weekend, or as successful as we can underneath the conditions.
Yeah, I mean, I was out on Main Street last Friday, and it was as busy as ever. I mean, you would not know we were in the midst of a pandemic. I mean, there was a long line outside the no-name. There were crowded sidewalks. There was lines for the, you know, the caramel apples and the ice cream.
Yes, absolutely. And again, you know, it's different for us to be able to see all those people waiting on the sidewalks versus, you know, being inside. I'm sure no name, if they were at their normal capacity, would be able to invite all of those people in. Mm-hmm. So it does make it look just slightly different, but it is nice to see people out and about on Main Street.
Yeah. So you mentioned that February and March are looking good. I mean, how good?
So February, I'm just pulling up the numbers at the second to see if I can give you a little bit more information. So what we're seeing for February right now is that it's, well, and again, these are projected, mm-hmm. so it's not actual, but it was only looking at 37% down, but there's always growth, meaning that people can always book after we see these reports. So we're expecting February to be perhaps only, you know, 20% down. March right now is looking, again, down, but healthier than many Marches have, or healthier than the other months have looked. Talking with, you know, our board president, Rhonda Sedaris, she had mentioned that this is the best March she's got on record. So I'm hoping that, you know, other properties as well are looking that way.
So are we comparing these numbers to last year, 2020, or 2019?
Well, for the previous months, you know, up through February, we can compare them to 2020 mm-hmm. Because we didn't really see the impact of the pandemic until March. And so once you go to March, you know, we're going to have to drop back to the 2019 numbers to look at, I guess, historical data and understand, you know, where we are compared to our typical winter March.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what it all rides out. Sales tax numbers in November exceeded everyone's expectations. The official numbers for the Christmas holiday, I think, are going to be released later this month. But any idea of how December and January went for local businesses?
I believe December, especially during the Christmas holiday, was very good for the local businesses. We also saw a significant uptick in traffic due to the snow globes. Each of the snow globes had a counter on them, and as well a QR code for people to interact with them more. And we saw over 20,000 people get clocked by the snow globes. And then over, I think it was 23,000 people had interacted with our QR codes. So we do feel like that was able to bring a good amount of people up during December. January, of course, you know, is down. And that is our biggest month, especially with Sundance. And that's not any kind of business that we can gain back other than through an event like Sundance.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more about this rideshare app, Ride On. I know that Deer Valley Resort is using it. Is it something that the city's promoting as well?
That's correct. Yes. So we had a presentation from Austin Taylor. He is with the transportation department at Park City, and he talked to us about the Ride On app. The resorts have been using it, I believe, for a couple of years, and it's something that Park City, or an app that Park City has committed to for 3 years. And what it does is really shows information that helps people be able to take alternative forms of transit or even carpool. So it's not just, you know, each individual employer and the interactions are restricted to just those employees. It's really anybody who's using the app. So if you live, they showed an example down in Orem, you would put in your street address, you would put in what hours that you go to work and what days you typically go to work, and then it shows you other people who have the similar schedule and are close to where you live. And so it really does help promote kind of the whole working community here in Park City to be able to find additional carpool or other ways to get into town. The city did the presentation. They're going to be offering a free trial for small businesses through November. And many of the businesses seemed quite interested in finding out more. And so we're going to be progressing with this. Our hope is to find out what the additional cost would be in November, or if the city would be able to subsidize that so that we can continue hopefully a great trial that we see this summer.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, I know last year before COVID hit, it was working well for Deer Valley. But given we've got a pandemic, I mean, does carpooling work?
That's a great question. And we didn't ask that specific question. I know that Victoria with Deer Valley was on and was saying that it was being used well this winter season. You know, my understanding, I mean, perhaps the people wear masks, or I don't know how the safety is done, I guess, in each individual car with each group that's carpooling together. But that wasn't an item that was brought up at the meeting.
Okay. It sounded like there's some disagreement on the Park Avenue restriping project. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So John Robertson, the city engineer, attended the meeting, and he gave us an update. The city council had approved last September a trial painting on Park Avenue. And this is really, from my understanding, you know, the council's desire to make Park Avenue more, feel more like a residential street, as well as be able to increase bicycle safety on that street. Becca Gerber, a city councilwoman who attended the meeting, her statement was that Poison Creek Trail is quite packed, especially with more pedestrians, strollers, people going at a slower speed, and that just the number of people using it, especially bikers, has kind of increased that potential for collisions on that trail. So using Park Avenue as an alternate as well for bicycles might help alleviate additional congestion on that area. And so John Robertson explained that essentially from 9th to downhill or north to the intersection of Deer Valley Drive, kind of by Colesport and Jans, they will be changing the painting on the street to allow for residential parking on the west side of the street. On the east side of the street, between 9th and 12th, there's 2-hour parking, or if you had a residential permit, it's unlimited. Then if you go up in front of like High West and Devanza's, Utuskian Gulf, that area down past Butcher's and Harvest, that will remain 2-hour parking as we see it today. The city engineer had mentioned that the striping is going to take place as soon as the weather stabilizes and they can get some dry weeks ahead. And so he had anticipated that to be taking place in April or May. And again, I guess this is all part of a whole construction project that they're looking at for 2022, where they're replacing the water line, the sewer line, and storm sewer. So Park Avenue will be under construction, not this summer, but the next summer. And then whatever the results are of this trial, you know, they'll amend that and then figure out how they want to restripe the street permanently.
Yeah, so are we talking about specific bike lanes, or are we talking about the sharrows, you know, where bikes share the lane with the cars, like we have
sure.
in Prospector?
So he clarified that there's going to be both sharrows on the downhill, because traffic or bicycles seem to go at a speed similar to the traffic, and then dedicated bike lanes uphill.
Ah, okay. All right, let's see, last few minutes here, car-free Sundays this summer.
Yes.
We are going to do them?
Correct. And again, you know, this is the HPCA's recommendation. We are not the final say-all because it's treated like an event. The city council does need to review and hopefully approve them. But we're looking to have car-free Sundays from June through the end of September. And they will be running concurrently with the Park Silly Sunday Markets. So Silly Market would be located in their historical location, which is just, you know, downhill or north of Heber Avenue. And then we would be keeping car-free Sundays from Heber Avenue up to the brew pub.
Yeah. So are we going to do anything different than on kind of Upper Main Street?
At this point, we're not anticipating anything different because we still believe we're going to be under COVID regulations, which again means that we can't draw a crowd. Like, we can't have a big rocking band and have people standing there and watching it. You know, we have to have more type of activities that are more ambiance rather than the draw. I do hope, and it has been talked about, that having this much time for the businesses to plan for what they want to do for car-free Sundays actually will make their activations, I think, more vibrant and more you know, bigger and, you know, different than what they had last year. We really came up with this idea last May, and we started implementing it in June, which was a tight turnaround. So we're hoping that this extra time gives people to become even more creative.
Okay. And it sounds like the restaurants love the car-free Sundays, but retail not so much. Can you explain the difference?
Sure. And actually, you know, the demographic that doesn't receive even as much traffic as the retailer galleries. So the restaurants and bars, this was really the target audience we knew would benefit from car-free Sundays. They have the strictest restrictions on their capacity, so we felt like being able to allow them to expand into the street, like the cabin. You know, they were able to, you know, expand the number of people they could serve than what they would normally be able to. Retail is supportive of car-free Sundays, but it's the galleries. And if you think about it, some of their products don't do well sitting in the sun, as well as the expense of their products. So it does make some sense why the galleries are not supportive of car-free Sundays.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just excited to see how the rest of the winter goes. So continue to encourage people to come up and visit Historic Park City. Again, parking is free until 5 p.m., and then your first hour is free. So technically, you could park till 6 with no payment.
Okay. Allison Kuhlow, Executive Director of the HPCA. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.